This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlela. Welcome to you, Lions.
Thank you very much, Gary, and to our podcasters. Good afternoon.
It's good to be back.
It really is.
Yeah.
So, Lions, here's a story of aggravation and frustration. Yeah. A few years back, one of our bright young students was awarded a four-year bursary by government CETA, S-E-T-A. All very exciting for all. I mean, a four-year bursary to study a BSc in beautiful Switzerland is a dream for any young South African, isn't it?
Come true.
Yeah. As it turns out, Lines, the CETA paid for 1 year, and when the student called for the rest, the CETA backtracked on the contract, refusing to pay.
Huh?
This left the student who was studying in Switzerland basically yodeling for his supper.
Yeah. Bravo, DJ Gary.
Where did you get this one?
That's what they do in Switzerland. Let's get the very student who's no more a student. Let's get him on the line. I think he's still in Switzerland. It's you, Luyanda Lesego Alexander. Welcome. Are you with us?
Yes, Gary.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Cool. Really good to speak to you. Where are you, actually?
I'm actually in London at the moment.
Okay.
I will have to doubt that yodeling was very accurate.
The question is,
quite on me.
Have you learned to yodel yet?
Getting there, just working on it.
You learn to eat chocolates, Swiss chocolate, cheese, and buying Rolex watches, I guess, in Switzerland.
Haven't reached that last one yet, but yeah, no, it was a great experience. Great learning experience.
Luyanda, we have in studio your attorney who walked a long way with you for years on this court case. We're going to discuss it in detail. Her name is Lorna Ferguson, and we're going to welcome her. Hang in for 1 sec. Welcome to you, Lorna.
Thanks, Gary.
Oh, you're out of breath. You're a bit late today. So.
No, I've been sitting here for a few minutes.
Okay, cool. This is your client that we're talking to.
I know. This is my darling little poster boy.
Oh, poster boy.
Well, we've got
that.
A picture of him, Lines. He's a very good-looking guy. He's Gary. Standing with two Swiss girls. I don't know where they're from, those two girls. I don't know if you've seen the picture, Luyanda. You will see it. We'll post it up.
It's your third-year report.
Yes. I think I have an idea of which one you're referring to.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we're going to discuss the case in detail, the hell you went through, with you and with Lorna. She'll give us more on the legal side. Let's quickly give out our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Have a look, please.
And you can like the page, and you just actually can give us any topic that you would like us to talk about, and we'll make it a point that we find a specialist who is a lawyer, very qualified and overqualified in most cases, to actually break down the subject matter. And if you really want to touch base with us on Twitter, it's at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. That's where you can actually touch base with us, and you can also suggest any topics that you would like us to talk about, and Gary and myself will find somebody who's a specialist, else. Somebody who's overqualified to break down the subject matter, just so that you get to understand the basis of it.
Our partner today is Legal Talk South Africa, with their now, it's just approximately 184,000
people. Yeah, baby. Members, yeah, baby. We're growing. And to the partnership, kudos to you as well as the page itself, because that is where people can actually be empowered by actually getting all the information that they need. And in so doing, we are actually enlightening people and awakening their consciousness. Yeah.
So, Luyanda, the CETA, which is the Culture, Art, Tourism, Hospitality and Sports Sector Education and Training Authority, which is a full title, known as CATH CETA, is one of 21 CETAs established, I think, as we all know, under the Skills Development Act. They, a few years ago, offered you a learnership to pursue a four-year BSc degree in Switzerland. Happy days for you. You must have been so excited to have been chosen as one of the South Africans.
Oh, yes. I was very thrilled. I was very thrilled with the opportunity. It was extremely exciting as well.
What is the value, would you estimate at that time, of the four-year course?
I don't have the numbers with me, unfortunately.
I think Lorna does.
Do you, Lorna?
Yeah.
Saving the day again.
at that time, they budgeted that this was in May. You signed it in May 2013. They'd estimated 1.7 million. For your bursary.
So does it include accommodation, everything?
And his flight over and everything. It was an all-inclusive bursary, a very prestigious bursary, yeah.
Luyanda, the course itself, it's a BSc in what, actually? What is it?
It's a BSc in International Hospitality Management.
Mm-hmm.
So, it spans over 4 years. It starts off as a very kind of practical course, so you're kind of, in the trenches, really learning all of the different aspects that make a hospitality business. So whether that's the food and beverage side of things, whether that's, the housekeeping front office, really understanding the roots so that eventually if you're going to find yourself in a management position, you can really relate to all the people who will be working in those departments, how to, optimize them and all of that. So a big value of the course is how diverse it is. So growing over the years, we studied, marketing, accounting, we did some law as well,
real estate,
investment finance, real estate. So it's a very holistic,
intense
course.
Where did most of the students come from? Are they locals or are they from all over the world?
All over. So there's 100 countries, over 100 countries represented, at EHL. So it's a very diverse community. We work a lot in teams. So, for example, in my first year, I was in a team of about 13, and in that team was a girl from Nigeria, a girl from South Korea, this guy from Lithuania, England. So it's really a diverse, melting pot. And when you actually experience that diversity is when you really see the value of it, kind of how many things we have in common, how, the different upbringings that, these people have had, how that shapes their perception of the world. So it is a very beneficial and, learning, opportunity. And I was very grateful for it.
Mm-hmm. Most people that want to get into the hotel industry land up at hotel school. Can you compare the two with hotel school against what you did?
It is essentially a hotel school. Like the name is École Hôtelière de Lausanne, which is, hotel school of Lausanne. Mm. So it is a hotel school, but what I've found is that there's a very, the view that we tend to have of hotel school is that you're starting to be a chef or a waiter or to stay in like a hotel. It's a very narrow kind of view, whereas the skills you pick up and that you need to know to have the to get the bachelor and to have an education in hotel school, it's very broad. So, for example, now many of the colleagues that I've graduated with, some are in, finance, working, for firms like Ernst & Young, some with consulting, some are in, luxury, retail.
Oh, so they're not in the hotel industry as such. A lot of them have moved out.
And a lot of them are also in the hotel, industry and have opened their own restaurants, their own businesses, or in management trainings in different hotel brands. So it's very broad, and the value of that we've been seeing from the employee market is that the focus in hospitality is people, and that's the main focus, and then all of the different skills are build up what the main focus is, which should be people. And so that's why you'll have you know, banking industries, legal, you know, marketing, luxury, are all valuing that, because ultimately you're selling products or a service to people, and being able to do that to the best of your ability, you really need to have an understanding of people working in teams, you know, leadership ability, management, and having that kind of global view to be able to guide, you know, the decisions you take and all of that. So it's very all-encompassing.
Lorna says, yeah, Lorna, it's an academic.
It's a degree. You know, it's a four-year BSc. It's an academic qualification as well as a hands-on qualification. And it's by reputation, it's the best hotel school in the world.
Let's rewind a little. Let's take you back to when you were a young student in 2013. What age were you then?
I was, I think, 17 at the time.
You were just out of school?
Yes. And I just graduated at the end of 2012, you know, I'm a trick.
What school did you go to, if I may ask?
I went to Hilti College in Pietermaritzburg. I was very fortunate to have a bursary to...
Are you a Zulu boy?
To, you know.
Yeah, originally.
No, Xhosa. Xhosa and Sotho, actually.
Okay, all right. So at 17, you matriculated, and then this came along, this wonderful learnership that was being offered by the Cath Seta, and you signed up with them. You signed in May 2013. You said, cool, I'm getting a four-year learnership program paid for in full by Cath Seta. A marvelous award, isn't it, bursary, at that time?
Yes, no, really, it really, really was. And you know, it really was a dream come true, because you know, I thought my chances of, you know, getting that were, you know, slim to none. So when something that, you know, is a distinct, you know, faint glimmer of hope in the distance becomes a reality, it's a very great feeling.
Okay, you signed up. They paid for your first year, and you flew across. Had you been overseas before, or was this your first trip?
It was one of, you know, the first trips. I was fortunate that for a little, you know, period of time, my mother was a journalist for one of the in-flight magazines. And so that's kind of where, you know, reading those articles and, you know, the global view and all that, where kind of my love for hospitality sparked.
Yes.
So, you know, when it actually came to fruition, you know, living in a distant place where you can't speak a word of the language is
and then the weather's freezing as well. The weather and the food and everything is very different to what you were used to. Okay, your first year you sailed through without a problem. And then did you come back to South Africa after your finishing the first year?
Yes.
And then you approached the CETA and you said, right, well, I've done well. I want to report back to you. You know, I want to talk about next year and tell you what, you know, how I've done. What was the reaction?
It was strange, because I, you know, I was expecting a lot more kind of back and forth, you know, how I could, you know, help. Like, is there anything I could share? Do you want me to write up, you know, an article or anything to kind of, you know, build, especially the hospitality side of that, and, you know, really work on that image. And as well to find out, like, you know, going forward, like what expectations, and, you know, kind of to plan for the way forward. And I was struggling to, you know, to get, you know, meetings and to, you know, plan for the next fees and when that can be paid. And
were they avoiding you? Did you get the feeling they were kind of trying to avoid you?
Yes. So it was, yeah, I was trying to understand, you know, what was the reasoning for that. And, you know, little did I know that on the other hand, there was a lot more things going on behind the scenes.
What did they tell you when you eventually got hold of them? What was the discussion?
It was kind of, you know, just they're, if I remember correctly, that they, you know, that they're under administration and, you know, there's these things going on. And so initially for me, that seemed like outside of my scope, because I'm not really, you know, I wasn't really involved in any of what would have been going on from that point of view. So
did you involve your parents? Yes. Did you bring your parents into that one?
Yes, yes. So my parents, you know, were very involved. I'm extremely grateful for them because they're great support systems, and, you know, they really have the mental fortitude of monks, because, you know, there are times when I was extremely stressed and, you know, panicking, and they held us together, as well as Lorna and, you know, so many other people. So
yeah, well, the problem was that you needed to make provision for next year's fees at the time. And
exactly.
The money wasn't forthcoming. They're very strict with their money in Switzerland, aren't they? I mean, if you don't pay,
yes,
you know, you're in trouble. And they, what is
exactly the deadline was nearing, you know, very, very quickly, and I was getting, you know, no traction from the other side, and it really was a battle to get a hold of them, and then.
Was eventually, Lorna, maybe Lorna, when were you brought in, at that time or a little later? Or?
No, I didn't do the first.
Don't run away, please. We're just going to bring Lorna in. Yeah,
I didn't do the first urgent application. It was done by Ezra Motlala and Advocate Gama. And that's
what was that application?
That was an urgent because the.
Come a little closer, Lorna. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can hear myself breathing do that.
So can our listeners hear. Yeah.
Okay.
We'd love your breathing.
Yeah.
So Ezra and Nkosi did the first urgent, because Luanda was due back in Switzerland on the 7th. And, you know, by the time his father had pinned them down on the 25th of August, and he had to be back in Switzerland on the 7th of September. And they'd been dodging and ducking and diving, etc. Saying, don't worry, we are under administration, but we have made provision, we've budgeted for Luanda, don't worry. On the 4th of September, 3 days before he's meant to start school again, Teboho received an email.
Teboho's his dad.
Teboho's his dad, yeah. Teboho receives an email and said, oops, we're so sorry. The contract.
I've actually got the wording. It says, as per the directorate of the administrator, I regret to inform you that the Cath Seta will no longer be funding your son, Luyanda Alexander's overseas studies. And that's it. Go to hell. Do what you like.
Yeah, it's what's it, a two-liner or something?
Yeah, it's actually a two-liner.
After leading them down, I mean, Luyanda had been back at home for, well, what would be the European summer holidays here, from the end of June.
Yeah.
And they leave it right up until 3 days before he's meant to go back to school on the 7th of September. And then this is what they do. So
they brought in an
urgent application, which came before Judge Victor.
Yes. What was the nature of the application? What relief were they seeking?
To compel them to
compel the CETA to pay up.
Absolutely. Well, you know, contractual obligation.
Yes.
Yeah, to compel them to pay.
Did they oppose the application?
Absolutely, with the most incredible vehemence. I wasn't on board at the time, but obviously I've got
all
the papers.
Well, you've seen the papers.
Absolutely.
What did they try and suggest? I mean,
they wanted to suggest that all sorts of skullduggery had taken place, and that they didn't know why Luanda had been given such an expensive bursary, and that they wanted to... essentially, they brought a counter-application to ask for a declaration for the invalidity of the bursary contract.
That would really mean that Luyanda's parents or Luyanda himself would have to repay all the money if he lost.
Well, that's of course what they...
that's what they were seeking.
At this stage, I think that they don't know. They didn't know what they were seeking. They were seeking to have the contract declared invalid, you know. And unlawful. I mean,
how scary for you, Luyanda, to face this? Where were you? You were in Johannesburg when all this was going on.
Yes.
I mean, did you go to court on the urgent application and see your advocate and lawyer fighting for for your second year's payment?
I did. Yeah, no, it was very, very scary.
Scary,
you know, very nerve-wracking.
What were they suggesting? You know, that they don't have the money, or were they suggesting that they didn't have to pay it? What was the suggestion?
Yeah, I mean, like Lorna can correct me on this, but it was, there were a lot of kind of aspersions being casted, you know, there's irregular, unlawful, and, you know, that they even, you know, I think like there was some wording initially that they said like it bordered on corruption. Mm-hmm. And it was jaw-dropping because, you know, one moment you're on top of the world, and then they're all up in flames in front of you. So it's very nerve-wracking.
Okay, so the case came before Judge Victor, who's a very good judge, and she made an order saying what, Lorna?
Oh, well, I've got it here. But basically, she said that she compelled them to pay. She granted their right to have a counter application.
She said, "You can carry on fighting. You can suggest whatever you want, but pay up now, and the case can just continue. And eventually, some judge will decide whether there was corrupt activity or not."
Yes, yeah. I mean, but the cheek of it—they brought no evidence of it, etc. They were just wheedling and.
So she postponed the case and made them pay.
She did.
Did they pay?
Absolutely not. The nerve of it—they were in contempt. So.
Sorry, Luyanda, you still sitting in your Johannesburg home?
No.
What happened to you?
When Judge Victor compelled them to pay, you know, and they did nothing. Yeah. Luanda's parents paid for him to fly back because, of course, essentially we'd won that. We hadn't.
You probably had a court order showing the Swiss school that
that he could start the new academic year.
They were going to pay.
Yeah.
Am I right? I mean, how did you get into second year? Was it a problem for you, Luanda?
It was, and you know, I have to be extremely grateful for the, you know, the finance department at EHL, and you know, for the patience, you know, that they showed, because, you know, all I had really was the court order, you know, saying that they would pay, and you know, for me I thought, you know, once, you know, there's a, you know, ruling from, you know, the court, that really, you know, it's unless you'd be in contempt to not follow through with that. So as, you know, time was going down, and, you know, you can only flash the court order for so long before,
how embarrassing,
you know, the pressure
for
really
you
turns
absolutely
on.
So there's no doubt that they just they did not comply with the court order. Notwithstanding that the judge should pay, they didn't. So they were in contempt. So what happened?
Well,
I think they issued what they call a writ.
No, well, at
which
that
is to
stage,
attach, yeah.
Yeah, at that stage I was on board. So
okay, what did you do?
Well, we issued a writ, and it was for their movable property. So they went into the Cathcita in Killarney in Johannesburg. And they scraped together, I mean,
a few desk typewriters and old typewriters and computers.
About 30,000 rands worth, and Leander's fees were 600,000, you know.
And what was the reaction?
To what? To the
sheriff of the court, yes.
Oh,
arriving and attaching their assets.
I mean, they couldn't have given a hoot, actually. Mm. Anyway, so we tried to get their lawyers around the table, and we talked and we did all sorts of things, and it made absolutely no difference. So I attached their bank account and froze it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. How much was in it?
Several million, yeah.
Really?
Sure.
Yeah. Several million.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, so... Yeah. Did that so, make
no,
them?
No, that, yeah.
That made
now,
them
now
pay
they,
attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they've been ducking and diving.
Yeah, now they can't get any money out.
Absolutely.
So the bank account was frozen.
So they then brought an urgent. They trotted off to court within days. We were in front of, first of all, Van der Linde.
Yeah.
And, you know.
They brought an urgent application to set aside the attachment of their bank account, basically.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. On what basis?
Well, you know, their replying affidavit was never submitted, so we didn't really know.
So they just rocked up and said, "We want to stop this."
They said, "We've got things to pay, you know, let us pay. You know, you're obstructing our mandate." Yeah.
Sure. anyway, it's government. I mean, it's
that very, is the yeah, point. Yeah. That is the point, and I think that's what we should get to discussing. But before we
end. This falls under the Labour Minister of Labour, doesn't it? This the CETAs. So
it's training. Yep.
Yeah. So it's Labour.
I'm not so sure, actually.
No,
do you know?
It's under the Minister of Labour. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway.
So now what happened to their application to set aside your attachment of their bank account?
Okay, so by the time, you know, after the second day, we came before Acting Judge Fisher and she sent us outside to settle.
Go out and settle, it's ridiculous.
Absolutely, stop wasting the court's time.
Yeah.
So we did settle and the settlement was made an order of court. But you'd think...
Well, what was the settlement?
The settlement was to pay his that year's academic fees.
So they agreed. They said, all right, we agree, we'll pay it. Just
unfreeze
the bank account.
Well, we said we're not lifting, you know, we're not going to unfreeze your account unless you pay. So, you know, send us proof of payment and we'll unfreeze it.
But they couldn't, where were they going to pay it from? From
the very same bank account, you know, if...
So you would agree to release the 600,000, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yes. So did they pay it?
Yes.
They did?
They did pay it.
Yeah.
No! They paid that year's fees.
This is the second year we're talking about.
So, well, actually, you've been a bit confused about first and second and third year at this stage, but at this stage we're fighting about third year
fees.
Okay,
whatever, right.
Yeah. But then, of course, this was an entire year late, and so the Ecole in Lausanne had got a bit smart about this. So they sent Leonda a letter at the end of July and said, if you haven't paid by the 30th of August, if you haven't paid both lots of fees, in other words, your third year fees and your fourth year fees in advance.
Yes, we're going to scoop you out.
Yeah.
And is that right, Leonda?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
So we're still trying to get the fees for the previous year and the deadline for the next year's fees. No, we're...
So
we're approaching. So
we couldn't get them to come to the table about the fourth year fees either at this stage.
Yes.
And this was dashing off to their lawyers and trying to get them around the table.
Did you bring another application?
Yes. Another urgent.
Another
we
urgent.
Had, we had to bring
the courts must be sick of you people.
Yeah. This time they argued fully and we argued fully.
Who was your advocate? Yeah.
A wonderful guy called. Jan du Plessis at this stage, yeah.
Where's he from? Which bar is he at?
He was at the Cape Bar, and he's now at the Midwest Bar. He comes from Potchefstroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you...
But very, very good contract advocate. Yeah.
I'm a very big fan of Jan. He's a maestro in the, you know, the courtroom. It's very fun to watch him, you know, watch him work. Like he...
Yeah.
The room, he really captures the energy in there. So I was very fortunate that had him as an advocate.
But we also had a very, very good interaction between us, which is always sort of very important.
Between you and the
between
advocate.
Between attorney and counsel, yeah.
Yeah.
Because who was your judge?
At this stage, on fourth year, it was Madiba, and we argued fully. And
I just don't understand. Was their argument the same? Was their argument?
First of all, their argument was that the contract was unlawfully awarded. You know, and the bursary was unlawfully awarded.
In what respect?
They weren't quite sure themselves, you know. I mean, they manufactured a few things under administrative law and they said that the previous administrator had overreached and it hadn't gone before the board and that Leander must have known somebody inside and so therefore there'd been some sort of corruption and skullduggery. Mm. I mean, they just came with anything that they chose. A fat affidavit, you know.
What they were paying their lawyers and advocates, they could have paid towards the bursaries.
Yeah,
they could have saved...
Yeah.
Tons of money.
But the interesting thing was that the new administrator of the Keth Seater, I don't know if I should use his name, apparently stood in Judge Victor's chambers and told her that he would rather spend millions fighting this case than pay this bursary. I mean, too extraordinary. I mean, so it became a personal vendetta, it would seem, of him against...
Leander and his family.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, you know, one would think so off and Madiba, the third judge in a row, also compelled them to pay again as an interim order and said, you know, costs will follow.
Is this for the last year now?
This is for the fourth year.
Leander, did you pass the 3 years without a problem?
He flew through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. You flew through, according
to
Lorna.
Yeah. No, he represented...
Actually, I have something very nice here. Wait a second. I just want to find it. It's you talking about... your conclusion of your third-year academic report. You say, I remain extremely grateful. This is you, Luyanda, for this opportunity to be an ambassador for my country and to attend the world's leading hospitality management school. I hope it is clear from this report and from my previous annual reports, I've done everything I can do to make the most of the opportunity. It's been very challenging and stressful to study under the constant threat of being kicked out of school for unpaid fees, but I've still performed well under the circumstances.
Wow.
Very nice.
No, that's heartwarming.
Yeah. We still got to find out what's happened to you, and we'll come to that. And
well, we haven't finished yet.
Yeah,
no, because can you believe it? Yes. You would think that after they'd been forced by the third judge to pay the final year's legal fees,
that they would pay it, but they didn't.
No, they did. They had to pay that very day because remember the Ecole had given a deadline and said you will pay by the 30th of August, and we were in urgent court on the 30th of August, and so they were instructed to pay and to send me
proof of payment.
And it was that then that Luanda was brandishing around at the call, you know, because still, you know, we had to get foreign currency and all of that sort of thing operating.
Yes.
Anyway, but you would think that that would be the end of it, but no, not a sausage. They then, in January 2018, decided to revive the counter application that Victor had said to them, okay, you can proceed with your counter application, you know.
So they wanted to bring that one back on the roll and argue that.
Wow.
Well, yes, this is so...
Who's paying all these legal fees in the meantime?
That's the point, isn't it? You know, civil servants who don't have to... You know, I mean, deep pockets are always a very threatening thing.
Yeah, I mean, our ex-President Zuma is utilizing taxpayers' money as well. This is our money they're using to fight young 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds.
Yes.
Certainly.
Yeah.
But this time, they abandoned their... review of the contract. They said, okay, we're not going to fight for this contract to be declared unlawful anymore. We're going to say that we have extinguished our obligations because we paid for his first year, and that was the figure that was...
So they came along and said it was only a one-year contract.
Yeah.
This was the new defense.
Yes.
Everything's cool. There's no more corrupt activity here, but it was only meant to be for 1 year, and you must pay back all the money we paid for the other years. You must pay that back.
Yeah, and they,
now, that's
1.4
enough to,
million.
Yeah, that's enough to ruin anyone, especially a young man starting out in life.
Yeah.
Luyanda, you're still there?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, no, agreed.
I think he's holding his breath because he got such a fright at the time.
Did you know they were after you for all the money they'd paid for the previous three years?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, that's kind of, in a sense, really
not a bursary, but a loan was what they were trying to turn it into.
Yeah.
I mean, any argument will do, you know, any port in a storm.
Luyanda, we have Lionel Makoko-Klele in studio. He's our contributor. Lionel, do you want to talk about this as well?
Yeah, Luyanda, I just wanted to find out, what did that do to you mentally, having to go to class knowing that you've got this huge case pending, which is actually going to define your whole future?
It's very, very stressful because you really feel like any day someone could walk in and say you need to pack your things and leave, and next thing you know you've done years, you know, and you've got nothing to show for it. There's no degree, and you know you're back at square one. You know where to go. So it was extremely, you know, stressful. And you know, again, I was very happy and very fortunate to have support systems like Lorna, my parents, and everyone who was there and, you know, who were supportive of the case. Even, you know, even the judges, you know, you have a whole, like, a team of silks on the other side trying to find any, you know, loophole to get out of this bursary. And, yes, it's very... very confusing, very stressful. You know, you're trying to understand if it's anything you've done wrong, or like, do you know have I had any contact with this person before? Because it really did seem, you know, personal. And yeah, and like as Lorna mentioned, like he had said to, you know, the, in Judge Victor's chambers that, you know, that he was willing to take it to the highest court. So it is. It really was like a weight that I was just kind of dragging around. But as well, you want to make the most out of your opportunity and to get involved and,
wow,
you know, to really try and make it worthwhile.
In making the most of the opportunity, in terms of your studying, how much effort did you really put into it?
Loads of effort. And you know, with academics, you really want to make that the focus, but as well, trying to go, you know, beyond that with extracurriculars. You know, I was fortunate to be chosen to go to the Africa Hotel Investment Forum, which was hosted in Addis Ababa, and to, you know, network, represent my country, represent, you know, the school, and, you know, mingle with African leaders in the hospitality industry. And, you know, so kind of getting involved and using all the resources available so that I can really say that, you know, of this opportunity, I've done as much as I can, and you know, it's been worthwhile, and it was, and I was a good person to choose for it, and, you know, all of that. So that was kind of my driving you know, point, yeah, and motivation.
Yeah, I think that most people probably would have given up a long time before you did. You never did. But, you know, when you're faced with senior counsel against you and teams of lawyers, and you might have to repay the money, you never know how a court goes, it's frightening, it's scary. You could have lost everything, but you stood your ground, and with great legal counsel, you did extremely well. Let me give to our listeners the case which has been reported. It's the name of the case is Alexander versus Casita, or Culture, Arts, Tourism, Hospitality. Alexander versus Culture, Arts, Tourism, Hospitality Sector. Please type that into Google. After that, put Safli, S-A-F-L-I-I, Safli. You'll see that you can read the whole case. It's fascinating. I've read it. It runs into a number of pages. What I liked at the end, Lorna, is that the costs were awarded against the CETA on the attorney and client basis, which is higher than the tariff. Normally, the tariff of costs is a bit like the medical aid tariff. This is a higher tariff.
It's a punitive cost.
Punitive,
order. Yeah.
Which means that the CETA landed up paying a fortune of legal fees. Not only did they have to cover Luyanda's, but they had to pay their own.
Wow.
They had senior counsel, which we know can be 30, 40, 50, 60,000 rand a day, which is what they got.
Yeah.
They spent that kind of money to try and fight a young student. So crazy, isn't it?
It's very crazy because it's nothing to celebrate about, because it's our tax money. So for them, it's like nothing.
Yeah.
It's our tax money.
It doesn't
money.
Affect their pocket.
Exactly.
They were absolutely recalcitrant from start to finish.
I mean, somebody must be held accountable. Somebody has to pay that from
You know what? That's a very good point. Yeah. Because what happens here is they lose the case, they walk away, and no one cares.
Exactly.
Someone should be held accountable. I hope that the powers that could hold someone accountable are listening to this.
True.
I mean, you know, it's a bit like Lines. We've done many of these shows where a policeman assaults someone else. They get the Minister of Justice gets sued. The Minister of Justice pays, but the policeman gets off scot-free.
Certainly.
And this is here. The administrator, whoever was behind this, should pay something out their own pocket. They should.
Well, interestingly enough, that when we looked at the Casita website the other day, or Lou's mum did, there's an acting new administrator. So whether we were in any way responsible for Mr. K having to leave, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Tell us what you're up to in London at the moment. What are you doing?
Yes, I'm kind of wrapping up an internship. One of the things, before you end off the course, you have, you know, the option to do either a thesis or a student business project, you know, where you have the opportunity to tackle a real business case with, you know, real clients over 9 weeks. So, you know, that's one of the big, you know, things I'm very grateful for with the course is the kind of real life experience, you know, you get, and you have big companies from like Nestle to, we had a few years back, UEFA wanted, you know, a team of students to design the VIP experience for the Europa League final. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all of these different kind of things. So the project we had was for a luxury hospitality investment company based in London to kind of revitalize their approach, their strategy, and to, you know, kind of prepare them for the digital world that we're living in. So I was very fortunate to be brought on to kind of to implement the recommendations that as a team we had come up with. So that's an internship I've been doing
We really hope that you come back to South Africa. We need people like you.
No, certainly.
And certainly. I'm sure you can walk in and name your price and name your job. Just don't go and work for the cat seat or whatever you do. Or maybe you should. Credit to your attorney, Lorna Ferguson. Lorna, you're new in the game. Although you're older in age, you qualified much older, didn't you?
I was admitted in my 50s. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you do before?
I was an art museum director, and I set up the first Johannesburg Biennale, which means that I was dealing with contemporary international South African art and reintegrating us into the cultural arena after the end of apartheid. And
So you're a late bloomer in law terms. In your 50s, having become an attorney, has it been to your advantage? Is maturity, does it help you?
Oh, well, I absolutely love it, actually.
Yeah. You love the practice of law?
I do, yeah. I do.
Why did you choose law at an older age? Or did you always want to be a lawyer?
Well, my twin studied law. Mm-hmm. I've got a brother twin, and he studied law when we were undergraduates, but I did fine art and I became the director of Tatham Art Gallery in Pietermaritzburg, where I stayed for about 17 years. Mm-hmm. And then when I left and I was freelancing, it became apparent to me that I might not be able to buy any toothpaste by the time I was 65 if we carried on. You know, I had a string of trainees, etc.
Yeah, well, you could use bicarb of soda, nothing else. You know that Colonel Sanders, this is something I know, he's the KFC man, Kentucky Fried Chicken guy. Do you know, Line, he sold his franchise business, I think he started at 62.
Yes. Yeah.
He was very old.
Amazing.
He only sold it for $2 million. Today it's worth, I don't know, billions.
Yeah, look at, let's just come home, the Ackermans, Pick and Pay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was fired. No.
Yeah, but Raymond Ackerman was a young man.
40s or so.
No, he's still a young man, I think. Yeah. So for anyone who thinks that starting out late is dead end, they're wrong.
No.
Well done to you, Lorna.
Yeah, no, it seems like Lorna has, you know, when you work with her and you speak to her, it's just like she's been, you know, and she's been doing it for decades. Like you.
Did you know this Gogo? Did you know this Gogo was a late bloomer, or did you think she was?
I ain't a Gogo doll.
Maybe to Lydia, do you? Anyway, you're in a very attractive Gogo, although you may not want to be one. Luyanda, well done. A story of courage.
Certainly. Yeah. And keep up the flag of South Africa flying high in Switzerland. And when you come back, please bring some Swiss chocolates.
You can bring Lionel the Rolex if you like. They make them there, don't they?
Yeah. Swiss chocolate.
Remember this name. Coach. It's Luyanda Lesego Alexander.
Perfect. Yeah, beautiful story.
Yeah, he's going to be someone special in South Africa.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. For president. Yeah. Okay, good luck to you, buddy. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's been great speaking to you.
You're in London. The weather must be marvelous there in the midsummer. Yeah.
London?
Yeah, well, not quite.
Not there yet, but we have moments. We have a couple of hours of summer every week. So.
Okay, cool. Thanks for this to you, Lorna Ferguson. Many thanks for joining us. And it's been very interesting. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
To our listeners, thanks for listening. Until next Tuesday, Lions, we're out of here. Cheers for now.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The laws of life. with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.